This is The Common Good, where we showcase the collective achievements of all that contributes to a positive and well-informed community. I'm your host, Joe Clemens. Our waterways are some of the most beautiful in the world. And in a time when we see our freeway and road system clogged more than ever, there's a group of folks in our community working hard to use our river to bridge our two cities and help us be more connected. My first guest this week is Susan Bladholm, president and founder of Friends of Frog Ferry, a project to provide ferry service on the Columbia and Willamette Rivers. Later in the show, we'll connect again with our friend Charles Humble, partnership and communication specialist with TaxAid of Washington State. The AARP Foundation's TaxAid offers free tax preparation assistance, and we have a group of volunteers dedicated to that effort right here in Vancouver and Portland. Now in its 50th year, TaxAid has helped millions of taxpayers with filing their state and federal taxes. And the best part is you don't have to be an AARP member, and there's no age requirement to get help. I'm Joe Clemens, and this is The Common Good. Our waterways are some of the most beautiful in the world. Many folks who visit or move to Vancouver and Portland are often surprised that we don't take advantage of our unique waterways or use them more than we do. Well, in a time that we see our freeway and road system clogged now more than ever, there's a group of folks in our community working hard to use our river to bridge our two cities and help us be more connected. And joining me on the program today is Susan Bladholm, president and founder of Frog Ferry, an initiative to provide ferry service on the Columbia and Willamette Rivers. Welcome, Susan.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me, Joe.
Yeah, I'm glad that you're here. You know, this topic is very exciting. I can't wait to talk about this today because I think it's something that a lot of folks would just automatically assume that we have and that we don't have. But to get into it, for those that have never heard of Frog Ferry, tell us a little bit about the plan.
Well, we are Friends of Frog Ferry, so we're 501c3. And truly, in terms of the plan, really this just emanated out of curiosity. So we are now just a group of public citizens, like a lot of your listeners, and we were curious why, when we are a community of river cities here, don't we have some sort of passenger ferry service? And so I started looking into it and talking with folks, and a lot of people that candidly are much smarter than I am, particularly when it comes to life on the water. And these maritime experts said, you know, really the Portland-Vancouver area is ripe for this type of service. And we're curious why we don't have it either. So that's really how the plan came to be. And it was only about 3 months ago where we sat down with a number of attorneys and all and said, okay, what do we want to be in terms of this entity? And that's when we realized we really should be a nonprofit. And so that's when we took on the name Friends of Frog Ferry. So it's not as if I got into this a year and a half ago when I first started and said, gosh, I want to run or research a passenger ferry service. I was just curious. And then as things progressed, we got to where we are today.
Yeah, that's usually what happens when curiosity strikes, right?
Right.
All of a sudden you look a year and a half later and you're like, oh my gosh, look what this has become. So the name Frog Ferry, what's the inspiration behind the frog?
Well, this is radio, so we can't show the logo, but I encourage folks to go to our website so they can take a look at it because it's one of my favorite parts of this whole initiative. Frog in the Chinookan mythology was considered very good fortune, and frog was the one that taught the local people how to fish by collecting nettles from the riverbank and knitting them together to create nets. So consider very good luck, very good fortune. And Tony Johnson is the chair of the Chinookan tribe, and their designated artist is Anna McIsaac. And they created this artwork, and I had the privilege of working with them when I was with the Port of Portland on a project. And after we completed that project, they gave me a lithograph of frog. And so as we got our passenger ferry service initiative underway and we needed a name for it, there was Frog, that lithograph right there on the wall. So I called them and asked for permission to use it. I said, I don't know if this is going to go anywhere or not. And they said, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And it's really appropriate because of the Chinookan tribe that 200 years ago were along the riverbanks of the Columbia and the Willamette. And Adam wrote a beautiful outline that's on our website and explained that, yeah, 200 years ago, there would have been dozens, if not hundreds, of boats pulled ashore. And this is there's an amphibious nature of Frog and all, but I particularly love the fact that this is a nod to our native past and being able to think about the founding at the confluence of these rivers and what was taking place 200 years ago and why people said, this is it. This is where we want to live.
Yeah. If they were here now, they'd probably say, hey, why aren't you using the river better?
right. They did it best. They certainly knew.
Yeah. So tell me about the mission of Frog Ferry.
So the mission of Frog Ferry is obviously to create a safe and sustainable passenger ferry service. And it's really all about connecting people to people here in the region, and certainly Vancouver to Portland and Portland to Vancouver, as well as connecting people to the river. And I'm born and raised here in the metropolitan area. And it's been very rare that I've been out on the waterways. And as I'm talking with folks, there are, you know, more and more of us are admitting that unless you have a boat or you have a friend with a boat, you might occasionally go out on the Portland Spirit for a special event. But the way our planning has taken place, it's often viewed the river as an obstacle. It's something to get around or over rather than to embrace it and draw people to the waterfront. And so that's part of our mission as well.
There's a pretty storied history of river traffic on the Columbia and the Willamette, I believe. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, and I don't pretend to be an expert about this, but Allison Tivnan, who's with Eco Northwest, she's a board member, and she's really our historian. And so she's been doing a little research on this, and I invite people that do have great knowledge of our past and trade and transportation on the river. We'd love to have that information. But you know, when you think back beyond the Native American past to back when it was the Oregon and the Washington territories, and you think back to the fur traders, and particularly here on the Vancouver side, was a major trading post and center here. And so there has been a history of having ferries before that connected Washington with Oregon. And it's my understanding that the last ferry that was really connecting what is now fairly close to our I-5 bridge was that service was discontinued almost 100 years ago. So this is really reminiscent of our past. And again, I think it's just great timing to take a look at, you know, communities are often laid out and the transportation is planned around riverways. And it's really why our community is laid out this way. However, it's a service that was stopped.
Sure. Yeah, we're on the corner. Our studio here is on the corner of 12th and Washington in Vancouver. And I have seen pictures in our historical museum, not far from here. Actually, you could probably throw a rock and hit it. It's not too far over on Broadway. But, or, yeah, Broadway or Main Street. But literally, if you go all the way to the end, that's where the ferries used to come in. I've seen pictures there of that. But what you're describing, though, for your plan is not just a novelty. It's not just a, hey, let's go hop on a boat and take a joyride. The plan for this is for this to be a true alternative to transportation that we have now between Vancouver and Portland. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Absolutely. So truly, this is about a new mode of transit, particularly when you've got the riverway as infrastructure that is right there. And to start, we don't see this moving a lot of people. Really, the initial time, effort, and money is really focused on the riverside infrastructure. I mean, that development and just thinking about where people are coming from and where they need to go. And so looking at that total throughput is obviously really key. This isn't a service that's going to work for everybody. You know, we understand that. However, if you start looking at some of the other river cities in the world, and we have validated that every major river city in North America has a passenger ferry service, mm-hmm. except for us. Mm. And I think we're going to validate it, but we have some folks that are still looking at it. We believe that of the top 80 river cities in the world, we're the only one without it. So why do they all have this? And we don't. So this is certainly not about being a novelty. I can tell you that in talking with the San Francisco Bay ferry system, they currently have 12 vessels, 7 terminals, 4 routes, and are serving 7,600 passengers a day. By 2035, they plan to have 44 vessels, 16 terminals, 12 routes, and over 40,000 daily wow. ridership.
Almost like 4 times as much.
5 times as much.
5 times
yeah.
as much. Wow.
So when and that's not a novelty. I mean, it's
sure.
pretty easy to go in, and we're going to coalesce all this research and do case studies, both like operational models as well as here on the West Coast, as well as how it was founded. So we can truly assess, what the projected growth could be. You mm-hmm. know, we want to make sure that we don't take advantage of the river, that we do this in a very responsible manner. But I do think over time is my mm-hmm. point. And it's just like having a bus route. Mm-hmm. You know, it's once you have that infrastructure in place, you've got the routes in place, it's just a matter of adding a boat.
Yeah.
You know, but it's a boat instead of a bus.
So you can scale it.
It's very scalable. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the one thing about ferry systems. It's very modular. You don't have to rip up a roadway or rip up a railway. You know, it's really the confines of the river. That's really your only confine.
Yeah.
If you don't have demand for a particular terminal or dock, you don't go there.
Right. Yeah. That's interesting. So what's been the hardest part so far on this project?
Well, the hardest part to start was my own confidence, really, in approaching this. I spent a lot of time the first 6 months apologizing for not being a maritime expert. And after meeting
Before we even start, I just want to say I'm sorry. Okay?
Yeah,
okay,
right.
Now we can start.
I know I don't know what I'm talking about, but I don't understand why we don't have this. And so when enough, I mean, really smart people mm-hmm. that their entire careers are built on the maritime world, they said, you got to stop doing that. You've got an aviation background. You have a pretty keen sensibility and background in transportation infrastructure. And give yourself a little bit more credit. And mm-hmm. even from the operational model, from service provider, I spent the last 5 years with a global helicopter company. They're like, if you've got that threshold mm-hmm. of understanding on the aviation side, it definitely directly correlates on the maritime side. So that was hard. And then the second piece of it is really establishing confidence with leadership.
Mm.
And this is so new to electeds here. And candidly, we don't have much expertise in it. And mm-hmm. so even though, you know, Washington State has had a ferry service for 65 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's part of the culture,
mm-hmm.
not so much down here on the southern part of the state, but there's an enormous amount of expertise here. And so as I started talking with the Washington State Ferry System folks and Kitsap County and King County, which are actually very similar models to us, they're all feeling very confident and very bullish about it. But for our local electeds here, they've been a little bit more reluctant. However, Mayor Ted Wheeler out of Portland is the first one that said, I'm on board, and let's look into the feasibility studies. The last one we conducted was 13 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and a lot has changed in that time.
And I remember when you were describing to me when you first, your curiosity was up and you were looking into this, there was a list of things that you were going through, and you were kind of checking them off, and you realized, hey, there's no barrier here, so why can't we do this?
Right. So those findings, that was Metro
mm-hmm.
Conducted.
Mm-hmm.
It was 2006 Willamette River Passenger Ferry Service
mm-hmm.
Survey, and it there's a link also on the frogferry.com mm-hmm. website if folks want to find it easily. And there's a summary to it, and granted, much of that survey was about, it's called a circulator pattern, so more for taxiways
mm-hmm.
on downtown, and there was a smaller portion about passenger ferry service, but it was talking about you have to have population growth.
Mm-hmm.
I think it says an excess of 10%.
Mm-hmm.
Well, over 13 years, we greatly
yep.
exceeded that. The other one requirement was commute time. It needs to exceed X, and it's like
Check.
Definite. That was an easy check. The next one was there needs to be advances in technology to assure a low wake. There are wake restrictions, particularly on the Willamette.
We want to minimize the
riverbanks, exactly, which is very, very important, especially the nature of our waterway here. And then lastly, you need to pull together a really strong coalition of public-private supporters. And at this point, we're well over 500 now. So it wasn't difficult even going through that to say, oh, we haven't quite done that. Oh, we don't quite have this. There is another thing that was pointed out, and that was about the docks. Mm-hmm. And we do have more docks than we did then. But we still will have some challenges for some. If some locations bear out that there's enough demand there and there isn't a dock, then you know there's extensive permitting and a lot of environmental impact rigor around that. So I don't take that lightly. But there a lot has changed in 13 years.
There's a lot of. It sounds like there's a lot of reasons why we should say yes to this as opposed to saying no. I'm curious though. If you could have your druthers and let's say you could paint whatever picture you want, what does success look like for you in this project? What does that look like?
Well, there are really two phases to this. One is all we're looking to do right now are conduct feasibility studies. So it's not as if my head's down saying, gosh darn it, one way or another, we're going to start a passenger ferry service. It has to make sense, you know, for all the reasons. It needs to make sense for our environment. It needs to make sense from a budgetary perspective. It does for the people aspect of it, you know, and really that triple bottom line, it just has to make good common sense. You can't force the issue because we're going to lose long term if that's the case. However, if the feasibility studies come back and they indicate this makes good sense and there are a lot of advantages here and looking at the cost against this. So one is the feasibility studies. Success is funding those and for all of us to be that much smarter about the potential of bringing this new mode to the region. And then the second part is if we get to go and there is an RFP that goes out for an operator is to launch a responsible and sustainable service for the region.
We're here with Susan Bladholm, president and founder of Friends of Frog Ferry. After the break, Susan, we're going to talk a little bit more about Frog Ferry, and I have some other questions about you and your background, and we'll talk a little bit more about what the routes look like and all that good stuff. You're listening to The Common Good.
Thank you to CBD American Shaman for supporting our radio community. CBD American Shaman are dedicated to bringing wellness through ultra-concentrated, terpene-rich CBD. The oil is derived from all-natural, 100% organic, gluten-free, non-GMO, 0% THC industrial hemp. CBD American Shaman is located in Vancouver at 2700 Northeast Andreessen Road, Suite A5. For more information, call 866-GOT-PAIN. That's 866-GOT-PAIN.
KXRW Community Radio wants to thank our friends and sponsors at Boomerang Therapy Works, where exercise is medicine. At Boomerang, they offer a variety of one-on-one treatment options that can be tailored to your health and wellness. They offer physical therapy, massage therapy, personal trainers, exercise programs, group classes, and specialize in customized Parkinson's treatments. Located in downtown Vancouver. More info available at boomerangtherapyworks.com, where exercise is medicine.
Welcome back to The Common Good. I'm your host, Joe Clemens. I'm joined today by Susan Bladholm, president and founder of Friends of Frog Ferry, an initiative to provide ferry service on the Columbia and Willamette Rivers. So, Susan, what did you do before Frog Ferry? Because you're obviously very smart.
I'm not that smart. My kids will tell you that. I am curious, and I do think I'm pretty good at surrounding myself with really smart people.
That's a very That's a smart thing to do.
Well, I made peace with it a long time ago that I'm never the smartest person in the room, and I really mean it. I'm not just saying that. I have really smart family members, so we all have to find our niche, right? Mm-hmm. But I really like coalescing groups of people as well. But for my background, most recently I spent the past 4.5 years with Ericsson, a global helicopter company, the strategic senior director of strategic planning and marketing there. And just had a great experience there. I love aviation. I'm a student pilot. I really like the rigor around that industry. Mm-hmm. And there's such a sense of wonder just around flight in general. And the work they do is really important, you know. So I spent the last nearly 5 years there. I got my start. I had 10 years with Business Oregon. It was the Oregon Economic Development Department for the state of Oregon and doing special projects for the governor. So that was late 80s through mid 90s. I also was a co-founder and executive ride director for Cycle Oregon. So I was the first ride director there. And that was back when, you know, people on bicycles were not particularly welcomed in rural Oregon. So we really had a culture shift there, and I'm really proud of that.
Yeah,
so a lot of people, it's a long time. That was 30-plus years ago.
You guys literally paved the way.
Literally and metaphorically, it was tough. And then I spent 10 years with the Port of Portland as the director of corporate marketing there. So had a really nice education with a dual port authority, industrial lands, the maritime side of the business, as well as aviation.
So student pilot, I remember when we first met, you were telling me about some of your curiosity was piqued flying over the different sound areas and the islands in northern Washington and seeing all these ferries zigzagging across there. And that was kind of some inspiration, too, behind why don't we have this down there in Portland?
Well, I think for anybody that's taken off or arrived at PDX, you know, it's always exciting to look out the windows and look down and, okay, where are we coming in? Which runway are we going to be landing on? And aviation does just give you a unique perspective of how communities are laid out and the infrastructure. And it's true. So taking off out of Little Aurora Airport down south of Portland and flying up and over the Willamette and the Columbia Rivers and seeing it being really wide open. And having worked at the Port of Portland, I was always looking down at the Port of Vancouver and Port of Portland and seeing what ships might be calling and what activities were going on there at the terminals. But pretty sleepy out there on the water. And then when you get up to the Puget Sound area, or up to the San Juans, or flying into Vancouver, BC. And even though it's open water, and granted, it's a very different kind of mission, if you will, you can see those ferries, and you can see the terminals as well. I mean, you just don't have to look very hard. And so I was just really curious why we didn't have that down here. And so after landing one day, I called a friend of mine, and that was Mary Shaver, and Shaver Tugboat and Marine is a very well-known maritime name. Mary's got Anchorage Launch Service, been her business, and talked with her a little bit about it. And she said, oh, yeah, my dad and I tried starting this about 20-plus years ago. And but you should go talk with this person. And that led me to Captain Ann McIntyre. And then she said, you should go talk with these three people. And that's honestly how it started.
So let's talk a little bit about the support for your project. What kind of support for Frog Ferry are you getting from the community?
This is the best part of it. I am so overwhelmed and grateful for the support. I can't even begin to put it in words. It's we have pro bono, we have law firm here in Vancouver. We have one in Portland. We have pro bono PR, graphic design, maritime experts, consultants, printers, lobbyists, web developers. We just had a social media team that just reached out, and these folks have come to us and said, we want to help. And I really need to quantify the pro bono work to date. I am pretty sure that between my time, just looking at, okay, billing out $100 an hour over the course of the past year and a half, plus all of their support, I think we're easily at $300,000 to $400,000 worth. So that means taxpayers aren't paying for that part of it. It's just a group of concerned citizens, and that community support is honestly growing every day. I mean, today I received text messages and emails from folks saying, hey, I read about you. I'm living on the East Coast, but I would love to help out. Or who can I write a letter to? So that type of support is really kind of the fuel behind this.
And you mentioned you have support from Mayor Wheeler in Portland.
We do. We do. So he had first committed his support this last winter, really. I mean, it's been nearly a year. And letters of support are also on our website. But it was about 10 days ago when he said, we want to financially support you. And looking at the different municipalities in the area, so that's ODOT, PBOT, Metro, City of Vancouver, TriMet. I haven't talked with CTRAN yet, but all of them said, where is the mayor? Where is Mayor Wheeler on this? And so he recognizes that, the leader that he is, and said, I'm on board. And so he hasn't given us that dollar figure yet, but he's working on it. And then I was told yesterday by his team that he's writing to the leaders of all those municipalities to say, join me and let's support this effort.
Excellent. Excellent. So for folks listening who want to get involved, what kind of things do you need? Sounds like you got a lot of really smart people already volunteering, but I'm sure there's a lot more that you might need.
Well, I appreciate the question very much. A lot of it is not knowing what we don't know. So the beautiful thing of this is you probably have listeners that are saying, gosh, I know about this. As you're talking about, it could be the heritage of the ferry system, or I know this person who's a property owner, or have you thought of this? I mean, there's so many of those just threads that are coming to us that are really helping us build the support behind it. But a very simple way to do it is we have a listserv on our website where people can just go sign their name and say, yes, add me to the list of supporters. And what that does is we have a quarterly newsletter and we'll add you to that list. And that's about it. And I don't share the list with anybody. And letters of support are also encouraged. So if you're with a neighborhood association, if it's just as an individual citizen, we have several letters on our website. It's individuals saying, we just think it's smart, smart to equip ourselves and be educated and learn more. That's all we're talking about here is let's conduct these feasibility studies. And again, if it doesn't bear out and there's not a good business case for it, we won't do it. But if there is, then we should do ourselves justice and pursue this.
So volunteerism, funding, and all of that is to the research to find out the feasibility of doing this. Feasibility, I would imagine, is around some of the routes that you want to do. I know that when we originally talked, you had mentioned, obviously, from Vancouver to Portland, Portland to Vancouver. Vancouver Waterfront now is a destination because we have all of that wonderful development down there. But you had also mentioned that there's potential for going up the Columbia River to areas up there that we probably wouldn't even think about for activities that are happening there to alleviate congestion on the freeway for transporting thousands of people.
Right. So there are five different feasibility studies that need to be created. And I have heard from folks saying, oh, my goodness, it's far too many, but this is what I'm being told. And really, for us to even qualify for federal funding, we need to do these feasibility studies. So that first one is the one that you're talking about, Joe. And so that's really looking at transit modeling, demand modeling. So where are people coming from, the points of origination, as they're leaving their front door, and where they're going to. So we need to see where that demand is, because this is not a Pollyanna, if we build it, they will come. I simply don't believe in that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we need to see that total throughput.
Mm-hmm.
So we understand, how are we going to get them even to Terminal 1?
Mm-hmm.
And knowing for this beautiful riverfront here in Vancouver, but there's a parking challenge. And so we're aware of that, and we know that's something we're going to have to troubleshoot, and that's not really our job to solve it, but to work with the local municipalities to say, if we would want to bring this service here, how would we solve for that?
Mm-hmm.
And so there's some different options that are being offered up for it. So there's that feasibility study. There is a triple bottom line feasibility study, economic, the environmental and social impacts
mm-hmm.
to it. There are a series of case studies I had referenced, so here regionally as well as globally, that are similar models. People mention the clearance for the bridges on the Willamette in particular.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd
mm-hmm.
be looking to Sydney and Brisbane, for instance, for
mm-hmm.
that one.
Because the goal is we don't want to raise any bridges.
We don't want to raise any bridges.
So all of this would have no impact on raising of any bridge.
I'm being told by those mm-hmm. maritime experts that there is a boat out there for this mission where we're
mm-hmm.
not going to have to raise bridges. And I don't really think it makes sense to stack up all of the road traffic.
To accommodate. Yeah.
You know, that doesn't make sense either. So
right.
I'm aware of that
mm-hmm.
as well.
Mm-hmm.
And we understand that with the tidal flow, that fluctuates by about 25 feet over the course of a year. So, yeah, that clearance is at a bare minimum. So we're watching that steel bridge in particular. But there's an operational infrastructure study and report that needs to be done as well. And that's with a global passenger ferry
mm-hmm.
expert that would put that together. Probably we're going to roll in an inventory of docks and
mm-hmm.
access to docks as part of that. And then from there, we go into funding strategies. You take the deliverables of all those feasibility studies, all those learnings, and then you map it over to a finance plan.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see, what would that cost? What
mm-hmm.
would the infrastructure cost? And what would the ticket cost? People ask me that now. I have no idea. You know, and
it's
I'm not going to pretend.
It's going to cost whatever it's going to cost.
Well, and to look at that and then say, okay, well, we know it's got to be competitive
right.
with other modes of transit. We can look at some of these other case studies and say, and here's what the going rate is
mm-hmm.
in markets that are much like ours. And you take a look at subsidy. And yeah, a lot of people don't like to talk about it, but it's public transit.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? All of your public transportation
mm-hmm.
is being subsidized. So for those folks that do say, gosh, I don't want any subsidies, and it's like, well, if you don't believe in public transit, then I probably can't have that conversation with you, because I just
mm-hmm.
believe it's a building block to a healthy community. But if you understand, we are spending an enormous amount of taxpayer dollars on transportation infrastructure, and all I'm saying is, let's see if this is a strategic and smart way to spend it.
Mm-hmm.
May not be, but it might be.
Mm-hmm.
And let's throw it in the mix, because none of our transit agencies are championing this and saying, let's move it forward. And
right.
and by and large, it's because they don't have the expertise, the background.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or the curiosity.
It really is
yeah.
curiosity.
So let's talk a little bit about the timeline. How soon before I can walk down to the waterfront and take a ferry to downtown Portland to eat at my favorite sushi restaurant?
Well, it's an ambitious but doable timeline, and that would be summer of 2022. So calendar year 2019, we focus on the feasibility studies.
Mm-hmm.
Calendar year 2020, we take those learnings and we map it to a financial plan. At the end of 2020, then there's a decision of a go, no go.
Mm.
If it's a go, that's when a municipality, probably the city of Portland,
mm-hmm.
issues an RFP and says, okay, operators, go
mm-hmm.
ahead and bid on this.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if we'll continue to be involved at that point or not. You know, of course we won't be if we
mm-hmm.
get a no decision, but if we get a yes decision, I don't know if we'll continue,
mm-hmm.
you know, and partner with an operator or not. I can tell you right now, honestly, I don't have someone in mind. That's not my intention. All I'm trying to do at this point is get through the feasibility studies
sure.
and say, does this make good strategic sense or not?
Yeah,
I would ask everyone to be curious with me
mm-hmm.
and to just take a pause and give us the benefit of the doubt. I don't have an agenda beyond us getting a little bit smarter. Because I do think together we're collectively a very smart community of people. Mm-hmm. And I do believe there's got to be a better way to deal with the traffic issues we're facing.
Tell us the website one more time. Where can folks go to learn more?
Frogferry.com.
Frogferry.com. We've been talking today with Susan Bladholm, president and founder of Friends of Frog Ferry. As Susan just mentioned, more information available at www.frogferry.com. Susan, thanks so much for joining me today and telling us all about your project and all that you're doing to make our community a better place to live.
Thank you, Joe. I appreciate the opportunity.
If you've been thinking you're all that you've got, feel alone anymore. 'Cause when we're together, then you've got a lot. 'Cause I am the river, and you are the shore. And it goes on and on, no, watching the river run. Further and further from things that we've done, leaving them.
Community Radio Like This is brought to you by the generous support by our founding sponsors at Adco Commercial Printing and Graphics, Clark County's local print shop since 1993. Adco features stationery, posters, flyers, tickets, business cards, stickers, catalogs, and much more. Print on anything and mail anywhere. Learn more at adco1.com. That's ADCO, the number 1.com.
Many thanks to our friends at Say Chow Catering, Columbia River Tap Room and Eatery. Chef Peter has been cooking for over 20 years in the Vancouver area. Private events including wine tasting, wine dinners, appetizer parties, and cooking demos. Say Chow Tap Room and Eatery boasts space for private events or drop-in for a quick refreshment and live music on Thursday and Friday evenings. Just a stone's throw away from the Columbia River, Say Chow, Greater Vancouver's premier catering company. Conveniently located at 2501 Southeast Columbia Way, Suite 270 in Vancouver. More information available at www.say-chow.com. That's www.say-chio.com or directly at 360-210-5522.
My next guest today is Charles Humble. Charles is Partnership and Communication Specialist with TaxAid of Washington State. Welcome, Charles.
Thank you, Joe. Good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you, too. So we met several months back. You came to me and you were like, hey, I want to talk to everybody about this really cool program that not a lot of folks know about called TaxAid. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, tell us what it's about.
Well, it's a program that was started this is actually our 50th year nationally, and it was started by AARP through its charitable foundation called the AARP Foundation. And they started this program back at that time initially to help seniors. Mm-hmm. Now, the program is we offer services to AARP members but also non-members, so mm-hmm. people don't have to be a member. They don't have to be a member to be a volunteer either. And the organization has just grown tremendously over that time, and it now branches beyond seniors. So we help anybody who needs help to get their taxes done, and we do the taxes, and we file them for them. We're there to help them. The only limits we really have on the services we can provide are the complication of the return. Obviously, somebody who has an enormously complex business or things like that, they just don't really qualify. So there are lots of things that are out of scope. But I would say we cover probably 85-90% of individuals who have normal individual tax returns.
Yeah.
And that's been it's been a growing business to the point that last year there were 35,000 volunteers nationally, and we served more than 2.5 million taxpayers and help them receive over $1 billion in refunds. In just locally here, we have about 60 volunteers who come together, not just during tax season, but actually year-round. We're working really hard now to recruit volunteers who want to participate and help the program be successful. And then, of course, our really intense time is between February 1st and Tax Day on mm-hmm. April 15th. And last year we served over 3,000 taxpayers in what's called District 1, and that is Clark and Skamania counties. And we have 7 sites throughout the county, mostly at public libraries.
So the service that you offer, you mentioned doing the taxes for folks. Is it free for them?
It's absolutely free. Mm-hmm. And it's a really great service because all of our people are trained. They must be certified. That means we have to pass tests, the people who actually do the tax work. And we have volunteers who are not, you know, don't actually prepare tax returns as well. There's mm-hmm. a lot of other stuff involved in, you know, pulling this off. But those people, the people who receive the service, they bring their information in. We do their tax return. We file it for them. We send them away with a copy of their return, and it's absolutely without cost to them.
I remember when we talked last time, that was one of the questions I had for you was, you know, it seems, you know, it's not really all that expensive to have your taxes done, especially if it's 1040 easy or something like that. Mm-hmm. But you shared with me that there are, you know, some folks that even if it only costs $30, that's still an amount that they could apply to, you know, bills that they have at home or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and it helps people too. You know, there's also options on when they get a return. You know, it's their money and they do with it what they want. Mm-hmm. But sometimes, you know, we can along the way when we're doing the counseling with them, we can help them with their finances and how they ought to think about things. You know, we're strictly there to do their taxes, but mm-hmm. you know, we get lots of people talk to us about things. And I would say that the $30, I would defy you to find anybody who would do your taxes for $30. I don't even think you can buy TurboTax necessarily
yeah.
for $30.
Probably closer to more like $100.
Yeah. And so the some of the larger returns that we actually do are for people who are receiving earned income tax credit. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've heard of that, but that's basically money the government gives back to people who are working but are living below the poverty line.
Mm-hmm.
And those kind of returns, and I know because I worked for commercial services before I did this, they can charge $200-$400 to do one of those returns because they are more complicated. They're not that complicated, but they are more complicated. And most professional commercial tax preparation services basically charge by the number of forms you use and yeah. how long it takes to do the return.
Yeah.
So, you know, if somebody's going to get a several thousand dollar refund back and they can get $500 tacked onto that because they don't have to pay for the service, I mean, that's tremendous to them.
Sure.
It has a tremendous benefit to the community to have these people be whole and get that money back that they really need to live on.
Yeah. So how does it work? If I'm interested in having my taxes done by tax aid, how do I get started?
Well, there's kind of two sides to this in terms of getting involved. You can get involved as a customer. You can get involved as a volunteer. But as a customer, we open our offices. Now, we haven't totally decided which day we're going to open, but we open late January, early February, no later than February 1st. And we have 7 locations throughout the county and in Stevenson.
Hmm.
So, and then we do some temporary things too. We go to Clark College for a few days hmm. during the season. Mm-hmm. So, and so we're not open every day, you know, 9 to 5 every day. So there are different places that are open different days, but there always are places open on the weekends and probably on the day that you can go there. And we're open as late as 6 o'clock and as early as like 10 in the morning. But we have to work around the people that host us in the libraries.
Yeah.
And I worked at the Central Library, and that's our biggest location, actually, just down the street here in Vancouver. So you would come, you would bring your material in. You would check in at the front desk, and we have a receptionist there. And then you would be met by somebody we call a client facilitator. And everybody, before they can, we can do their taxes, they need to go through a form so that they can provide the basic information we need. And then when we sit down to do their taxes, you know, we can get through it reasonably quickly. So that saves the tax preparers a lot of time by having them fill out this form.
Yeah.
And lots of times they need help doing that.
Right.
Because they don't know what some of the things are. What,
sure.
You know, what's meant by...
There's a lot of things I don't know about on the
filing
form.
Status even. You know, well, I have two kids, but one of them lives with my ex-wife. And,
yeah.
You know, a lot of that stuff becomes really complicated. And we help them with that so that when they sit down, they're ready to go.
Yeah.
And we can usually, on a simple return, we can get through it in... a half hour. A more complicated return can take a lot longer.
Yeah, yeah.
And one of the things that's unique about our service is that all of our returns are double-checked by a more experienced person. So everything is quality reviewed, and that isn't always the case.
Mm-hmm.
So I think not only do we provide a vital service, but we provide a very, very good service too.
Yeah.
I'm here with Charles Humble, Partnership and Communication Specialist with TaxAid of Washington State. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. You're listening to The Common Good.
KXRW Community Radio wants to thank our friends and sponsors at Boomerang Therapy Works, where exercise is medicine. At Boomerang, they offer a variety of one-on-one treatment options that can be tailored to your health and wellness. They offer physical therapy, massage therapy, personal trainers, exercise programs, group classes, and specialize in customized Parkinson's treatments. Located downtown Vancouver, more info available at boomerangtherapyworks.com. Where exercise is medicine. VIP Photo Booth combines classic memories with modern technology. Their open-air design allows for multiple people to participate with digital props, whether planning a corporate party, wedding, or any other special occasion. VIP Photo Booth is sure to provide hours of entertainment, smiles, and laughter. More information available at www.vipphotobooth.net or at 360-721-0224. That's vipphotobooth.net or 360-721-0224. 0224.
Welcome back to The Common Good. I'm your host, Joe Clemens. I'm here with Charles Humble, Partnership and Communication Specialist with TaxAid of Washington State. Welcome back, Charles. Before the break,
you.
We were going to talk about the IRS.
The IRS.
So what's the relationship between TaxAid and the IRS?
Well, we have a very tight relationship with the IRS because we do sort of work for them in a way. I mean, we help them collect taxes. Or at least we help them. We help people file their returns, which isn't always collecting taxes because most of the people we do returns for get money back. But the IRS, you know, I mean, as opposed to what people sort of, you know, the opinion people have of them, they want people to if they have money coming back, they want them to get that money,
mm-hmm.
and they like them to understand the system too, and they know that our service helps a whole lot of people that. Well, they might not file, or they might push it off, or they might not, you know, it just helps more people be accountable for what everybody's obligation is as a citizen of the United States.
The state of Washington, we're very fortunate that we don't have state income tax.
Mm-hmm.
However, our neighbors to the south do have a pretty hefty one.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys help folks do their state
returns?
Oh,
yeah. We do in Vancouver, we do a ton of mm-hmm. Oregon tax returns. As you know, there's 70,000 people that work mm-hmm. in Oregon and live in Vancouver. So, and that applies all along the border with Oregon and Washington. And then we also do Idaho returns over on the other side of the state. So, yes, and there again, that's just more savings for people. And that's we have the software to do that. And we're trained on the Oregon returns, and we have people in all the offices that really understand that and how to deal with the kicker when they have that. So it's part of what we do.
Another question I had for you was July, you went to Kansas City for Tax Aid Conference. Mm-hmm. How was that?
Well, it was great for me because I'm just new in my position on the state management team. And it was a real eye-opener for me to be able to meet other people from all over the country in different disciplines. A lot of tech people were there, too. We have a huge technology aspect to the volunteer part of mm-hmm. what we do, because you can imagine with we do everything on computers and servers and wireless and all those kinds of things and internet. And in fact, if the internet goes down, we go down, you know, when we're doing taxes. So it was a great experience. Learned a lot. You know, I'm a little feeling a little less in the dark now for what I'm supposed to be doing in terms of helping people around the state with their communications and their partnerships and how to get that information out to them. So, yeah, it was mostly training.
But, did you get some good barbecue?
Unfortunately, we were pretty much ensconced in a hotel out by the airport, and it was kind of hard to get away. But I will say that the hotel knocked themselves out with some pretty great food, and we did have barbecue one night.
Wonderful.
Yeah, we did
Wonderful.
Have barbecue.
Well, at least you got to have some. So why do you do this?
Well, I retired 4 years ago, and I didn't feel like I was completely out to pasture, but I didn't really want a job that I had to report and keep doing that sort of thing and on a regular basis. I didn't want to be pinned down. So I actually was looking around for something to do, and a friend of a friend said that he was doing this gig with H&R Block. And they are a, good reputation company, mm-hmm. and I like to work with numbers. And so I said, you know, I'm just going to take the class just so I can see what this is all about, and it'll be fun because, you know, you got to keep learning.
Yeah.
And so I took the 6-week class, which was very intense, but very fun. It was, believe it or not, it was a whole lot of fun, solving lots of problems, tons of homework, man. And paid for the class myself because that's how it works. And I passed the test, and I worked for Block for 1 year. And it just really wasn't my cup of tea because I was kind of in it for the people element and helping people and stuff.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, there's a lot of people that work there, and it's to them, it's like it's a big chunk of their income. So they have a lot of, you know, people who just work during tax season. And I just didn't work great for me. So I was, you know, at home. I picked up the Columbian one day, and I saw that this thing called Tax Aid was looking for volunteers. And I had no idea what it was, never heard of it. And I said, well, you know, I probably could do this. I already have. I was just trained last year. Mm-hmm. You know, things change every year. So I went to the website, signed up. They got a hold of me, went through the training, loved it. Yeah, it was just a different atmosphere, a lot more collegial, working with a lot of people my age. But our focus is on helping people as opposed to meeting some kind of revenue goals mm-hmm. or something, because mm-hmm. we don't have those. So, and there's just, you know, there's a lot of people that can use this service that it just works for them. And, it, you know, there's takes all kinds of organizations to help people out. And I learned that the organization is pretty substantial in mm-hmm. terms of its infrastructure, and it's well financed, and that always makes it fun. If you're mm-hmm. you're gonna do something and volunteer your time, it's nice to know you're working for a quality outfit.
Yeah.
And I think Tax Aid and the AARP connection on it is top notch. Mm-hmm. And then I was asked to help out locally with communications, and I did that. And a year later, the person that was in charge here locally became the state director, and she said, well, hey, do you want to help us out too? And so I said, well, I guess I can do that as long as I can learn the ropes. And so here I am.
So if folks want to volunteer, how do they sign up?
Well, it's pretty simple. They can go to a website, and I will tell you what that is, and then I'll spell it out so everybody knows what it is. The website is aarpfoundation.org/taxaid, and that's tax aid with no hyphens. So that's aarpfoundation, all one word, .org/taxaid, TAXAIDE.
Mm-hmm.
Go there, and that's the volunteer page, and about middle of that page is very simple, very simply laid out. It says volunteer, and you click on it, and it'll ask you for your information, and somebody will contact you.
Charles Humble, Partnership and Communication Specialist with TaxAid of Washington State. Charles, I really appreciate you being on the program today to tell us all about TaxAid.
Thank you, Joe.
'Cause I'm the tax man. Yeah, I'm the tax man. Should 5% appear too small? Be thankful I don't take it all. 'Cause I'm the tax man.
That's all the time we have for today. I want to thank my guests Susan Bladholm with Friends of Frog Ferry and Charles Humble with TaxAid. To see and hear more about today's guests and their programs and what's going on in the community, join the conversation on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at KXRW Vancouver. Community radio like this is made possible by the generous support of listeners like you. If you would like to donate, please visit us on the web at www.kxrwvancouver.org. For all the volunteers and supporters who make community radio possible, this is Joe Clemens, and I want to thank you for listening, and we look forward to seeing you again right here on The Common Good.
Thank you to CBD American Shaman for supporting our radio community. CBD American Shaman are dedicated to bringing wellness through ultra-concentrated, terpene-rich CBD. The oil is derived from all-natural, 100% organic, gluten-free, non-GMO, 0% THC industrial hemp. CBD American Shaman is located in Vancouver at 2700 Northeast Andreessen Road, Suite A5. For more information, call 866-GOT-PAIN. That's 866-GOT-PAIN.